Men and education. It's far from a controversial topic. Men were once the leaders of education long, long time ago. They still may be the leaders today. Many people do recognize and see that women are the backbone of the educational system, starting from motherhood. But today's conversation is specifically talking to a diverse group of men who want to give an opinion about how they think men function in the educational system and their appreciation of women in that system. So, without further ado, let's go. And today on Voices, this is a specific episode that's near and dear to my heart because I happen to be a man and I also happen to be in education. I remember when the calling hit me to be in education when I was in England coaching sports. I was like, man, I think I might be good at teaching. I don't know if I'm good at it. No, I do know I'm good at it, if I'm going to be absolutely honest. And so today I have a couple of gentlemen joining me to talk about men in education. And so no person can introduce themselves better than themselves. So I'm going to have the gentlemen introduce themselves. I'll have Alex, Anthony, Matt, and then Mike introduce themselves. So thank you, gentlemen, and I look forward to hearing your introductions.
Hey, guys, I'm Alex. I've been teaching for 4 years. I'm currently working my second year in an international school in Colombia teaching English and literature. And my background is mostly in engineering, but once I started teaching, I fell in love with teaching and something that I'm very passionate about. And something I'm hoping to do for the rest of my life.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. And Anthony.
What's going on, guys? This is Anthony Gordon. I first started teaching 2011 at Mallard Creek High School, teaching math, math one and then math three. I currently moved on to doing a job coach position. Taking kids with learning disabilities off campus to get job experience. I also moved into the classroom at J.T. Williams Montessori, where I'm currently at this moment. It's a pretty different environment compared to the traditional world, but it's been cool. It's been great. Like I said, I just kind of jumped into teaching accidentally, but I've been stuck and continuing for about 9 years now, so.
That's awesome, sir. Thank you. Thank you. And Matt?
My name is Matt Riggins. I am a high school social studies teacher. I was a North Carolina teaching fellow, which is kind of how I fell into teaching. It wasn't my dream, but it's year 13 now, and I've enjoyed all of them. I did 11 years at Parkwood High School in Union County, North Carolina, and have been at Central Cabarrus High School in Concord, North Carolina, about the past year, and I guess we'll call it half a year since it feels like it's been a while since I've been to work.
All right. And finally, Nixon, Mr. Mike Nixon.
Well, that's me, Mr. Mike Nixon. 22 years now teaching middle school English. Taught in Charlotte Mech, taught in Gaston County, currently at the school that I went to junior high in, Mount Holly Middle School now. Met Mr. Nesbitt there and looking forward to having a nice discussion about education with you guys.
Awesome. I am so super duper excited. So I'm going to hit you with the first question and we'll go Nixon, Matt, Gordon, and then Alex to end it out. So education is constantly evolving. And in my opinion, it's often reactive when it should be a proactive thing. So like in the last 100 years, you know, education has changed a bunch. And it's been a shift where men were like the primary educators, and it shifted to women being the primary educators. Why do you think that happened? So again, I have Nixon, and then Matt, and then Anthony, and then Alex.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that premise. I don't know how far back you want to go with the men-dominated part of it. Ever since I can remember, certainly since I started teaching, it's primarily women. Maybe it's at the grade levels that the discrepancy starts to show up. Elementary schools is way majority women. Middle school, there's a few more men. And then when you get to high school, yeah, there's more men involved. But there are a lot of women at the lower levels, especially. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that's probably good in many ways. I do know that a lot of times I'll have some parents tell me that this is the first time they really had a male teacher. They come up through the elementary schools and they've had nothing but female teachers. And they get to middle school and they have to start dealing with a man. And a lot of times a man will run a class differently than a woman will. So, yeah, I guess it's good to have both of them in there. As far as a change, I don't know what you're talking about over the last 50 years, 100 years, 10 years.
I guess we can be modern and talk about the last 50 because, I mean, if we think about education, it was like first it was a church-dominated thing, so you had the priest teaching, and then it moved forward where it was primarily seen as men, but then it shifted. So it kind of depends on your perspective.
I guess just in my experience and what I saw as a student and what I've seen since I started teaching, it kind of breaks down at the levels that I talked about. Elementary school, there are a lot of women teachers, almost all women teachers, and then the males start to add on in middle school, and then maybe it's even 50% by the time you get to high school. Would everyone else agree with that, maybe?
Yeah, so I have Matt go, but I'm guessing you probably will have a chime in.
Yeah, I'd say I'm guessing that most of us, you know, if we're educated in the States, I can't speak to other countries. Kind of had that same experience. I don't really recall male teachers too much in elementary school, outside of like PE. And then middle school, you get more than high school. You know, I'd say like most faculties I've been on have been close to 50-50. I don't know exactly why that changed, except for like I think a lot of people kind of see it as education is almost like a, like if it's going to be a two income family, that's kind of like the it's not the main bread earner, so then or breadwinner, so then it's viewed in a lot of ways as almost what people might call like a pink collar job. They said, oh, I've heard that, where they say, oh, that's, you know, that's for women to do, and that's just kind of the, you know, a secondary income that the family can have if they want, but obviously it's not meant to be a primary earning position. I don't know if people would outright say that, but I think for a long time that was kind of the public secret, I guess, about how teachers get paid and who should teach.
Yeah. Anthony?
So just piggybacking, I think, like you said, if you think about it, just going back in history, like you said, it was male, but I think probably the early 30s or, you know, the women started to have those opportunities. I think the times have changed to where, you know, now women are, you know, they had those opportunity to go to school and pursue higher education. And that's when they kind of started building female colleges. And so probably by the 80s, you got to think about it. Most women are, you know, actually graduating from the college level, basically like the doctorals, masters, all these degrees, when a lot of, you know, surpassing the men tremendously. So I think that's another reason why you probably see more, you know, especially in this time frame, you see a lot more women kind of dominating a lot of fields because they are pursuing these dreams and, like you said, actually mastering these things to where you're seeing them in the classroom over a period of time. I think that's kind of why it probably did change to where you're seeing, like you said, an elementary level, most women, and I guess you said men kind of just weaned away from it, I would say, in my opinion. It's kind of not one of those things, like you said, how you kind of said it's a pink collar job now. It's not really something that we necessarily strive to do. But I just know over that time frame, I just know a lot of women did kind of surpass as far as the education level, how they take it. Even to this day, I see a lot of women that are sticking to it versus a lot of male counterparts that are just kind of getting the basis of GEDs and high school diplomas and stopping there, especially with the youth and kids that we teach today.
Okay. And Alex?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Anthony, especially how it moved from the 1920s and 1930s up to nowadays. Since women back in the day used to be more like housewives, and now they've progressed from like housewives, they need to get education more. And since they had that mentality of like being able to take care of a house, raising a family, they are, I also believe that families also trust, and elementary schools trust female teachers more than male teachers because they know how to take care of their kids, especially families in private schools. Families feel more secure with a female teacher in the class environment than a male teacher. I've done elementary, and I love teaching elementary. It's fun, but the energy that the kids transmit, it can be a challenge sometimes. And I feel like maybe a female role can maybe handle that more than a male figure teacher, from my perspective.
That's awesome. Anybody want to follow up on anything before I go to the next one? Those were all great answers. I love them. All right. So the next question I have actually goes a little bit with what Nixon said, and a little bit with what Anthony and Alex and what everyone said, is it seems like there's a hierarchy, or sort of, I guess, maybe even a segregation in a sense, between men and women as far as the infrastructure level goes. Like, for instance, I know more so in the past than now, but in the past you saw men as administrators of the schools, or they held more significant leadership positions in the systems, like as superintendents and things like that. So while I think there's a slight shift, why do you think it's been in that place where men were always in those roles of power, as opposed to women, even though women were a part of the workforce? So I have you answer in this order, Anthony, Matt, Alex, and then Mike.
I say, I think, if you think about, like I said, you kind of got to go back in history. I think history is kind of one of them things that, if you think about it, the way things were set up, you know, men were kind of in that dominant role. We kind of ran things on the outside. Women were inside the houses, taking care of the families. We were working at the factory, you know, so it was kind of that predominant. So I think when you fast forward to these positions, we kind of have that group of men who say, okay, well, cool. You know, this position needs to be filled. I know you, I trust you, I know you can handle this, da, da, da. And so you pretty much get into that role where I think it's more of a networking kind of thing. So instead of hiring a woman in that position, I already kind of know John or Dave can handle this. And it's just kind of that network. So you really never really got a chance to see those women kind of thrive in these type of positions now, because I think we collectively, like you said, men kind of run things, and we kind of have this, you know, we want to kind of connect with people that we kind of already know in these positions. So it's easier to just to hire Tom, Jim, versus kind of trying to put a female in that particular role, kind of from our.
I get that. No, I totally get that. And Matt.
Yeah, and I think, too, maybe you don't see as men seek administration positions, because when they're in the classroom, that tends to be, especially at the elementary level, that they kind of have that more of that, like, nurturing kind of role where they'd rather be around the kids than have to be in charge of a bunch of adults. And sometimes I get that. Sometimes I'd definitely rather be in charge of kids than in charge of a bunch of adults, too. I think it's just, it's, you know, more so back in the day, but you had more men kind of pursue those positions and, like Anthony said, have better access to those positions. I guess my career has been a little bit different. I was just sitting here counting it out. I've worked for three female principals and only two male principals, you know, all of different, you know, different leadership styles, different abilities, good and bad. So I think that just down to the fact that back in the day, you know, there wasn't as much access for women to be in charge, and people kind of viewed it as, you know, men are supposed to lead things. Men have historically always done that.
Right. I understand that. And Alex?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Matt and Anthony. It's definitely about probably less females seek male those high roles positions, like a principal. But I think nowadays it's been pretty much equal. I've worked for female principals, male principals, and I don't think it matters as much as it used to. More so, it's both. I think both roles are equal.
Okay. And Nixon.
I have worked, I was looking at, like Matt was, I was counting it out. I've been at three schools, had four principals, all women. And each woman had a male assistant principal at one point in time. So I don't know whether that's, I'm sure that is unique, apparently, according to the rest of you guys. But I'm wondering how far back you'd have to go. I just know at my school, I had a club at my school this year. It was called the History of Mount Holly Middle School. And we looked back, you know, we got online and we looked into some old yearbooks and that kind of stuff. There's an elementary school across the street named for a teacher, Ida Rankin Elementary School. But she was a teacher. She wasn't the principal. But we did research the principal of that school, the first principal, and he ended up being the principal at my junior high when I was a student there. So wondering if women were allowed, were they discouraged from being principals, 30, 40, 50 years ago, or whether it was just like some of the other guys have said that it was something they'd rather just stay in the classroom. I know I wouldn't want to be an administrator. I would much rather be in the class with the kids. Parents and stuff that goes on from an administrator standpoint. So I think that might also be something to look into at some point. Why do we have people running or trying to be administrators today? Does it have anything at all to do with gender, or is it more job performance and job description and that kind of thing? Yeah, I haven't had any male principals, so maybe that's the trend. I don't know why the guys aren't trying to do that now.
You know, it's interesting. I think as far as like I've had what, two male principals and two female principals, and I know I remember hearing some specific things about just sort of the way they sort of run the teams, and I think that's an issue. For some people, but I also look at it as becoming an administrator is not truly an advancement because you can't completely separate from what you're doing in a sense, right? So you don't necessarily have to be a classroom teacher to be a principal, because I think at one point in one of the school districts I worked in, the superintendent never was a teacher. He was just like a man in business, and so he just ran it as a system. But moving to the next question, and I think this one is a valuable question for people to understand the dynamics of being a teacher. Do you remember your first year teaching, and what did you do to help you make it to your second year of teaching? Because there definitely were challenges there. So just curious about that. And the order I'd like you to go in is Matt, then Alex, then Mike, then Anthony.
Yeah, I do. I was 21 years old, and I got hired to teach at the high school I graduated from. So day one, I've got kids in class that are little brothers and sisters of people that I went to school with and I grew up with. There was a girl in my second block class that I dated her older sister for like a year. So I was like, oh, hello. But it was cool because since I'd grown up in that community, I felt like I had a pretty good support system. And while it does feel kind of like, especially between, starting teaching and coaching football and all that, and trying to juggle all that time management and make new lessons and write new tests and all that kind of stuff that first year teachers have to do, just kind of as you're learning to teach, it's kind of like drinking water from a fire hose. I felt like it went well. And I think that I was given room to kind of fail a little bit, because you do get that autonomy to kind of do in your class. And so you get to kind of see, what works, what doesn't, which is kind of nice. We weren't told what tests to give or what lessons to give or what order we had to teach stuff. I mean, we knew we had the state test at the end of the year, but really that was pretty much it. So it was really kind of nice. Like, I mean, I enjoyed my first year teaching.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. And Alex.
Yeah, my first year was a challenge. I remember when I first walked into the class, that first class, most of the kids were like, oh, he's a newbie. So, they weren't paying attention. They were all doing math homework. But by the end of the class, I got their attention. So I started like showing, it's all about catching. It's all about getting the kids into your class, getting into and finding you interesting as a person. So I'm getting to know that my internet is unstable. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Okay. Yeah, so it was all about getting their attention with the kids. So yeah, definitely the first year was classroom management was a big challenge. Getting through class lessons, getting everything on time, preparing, planning, because the support that I got was very little. But what really caught my attention was how you can really connect with the kids and the reactions that you would get from them at the end of the year or at the end of a semester or after they've learned something. And they would say, hey, teacher, thanks a lot for this and that. So yeah, the second year was things have settled in. You can see that kids would start. Well, I think the class planning is what really made my second year a lot easier and a lot better because the kids would get into my class more and I would put more pressure on them, less pressure on me. That first year, I think I put a lot of pressure on myself more than on the kids.
That's cool. Well, thank you. Awesome. And Mike?
I guess this question is kind of geared towards the problem of retaining teachers and keeping people in the education pipeline to teach. And that's a problem these days. I came at it a little differently. I wasn't like Matt. I wasn't right out of college. I went back to school to get certified to be a teacher. I was 30. When I had my first class, so you know, I was a dude. I was a man at that point. I had a kid on the way, and I didn't have a lot of the problems that maybe a right out of college teacher would have, where you think you're an adult by age and definition, but you know, you hadn't really had a whole lot of life experience going on. So I was able to bring that into the classroom, and the kids, you know, they didn't know I was a first year teacher necessarily. They just thought I was this old dude with a weird mustache. And again, there was another guy right beside me. So they had other men on the team, that they would see on a daily basis. But, I do remember bits and pieces of that first year. I think that, really depending, it doesn't matter what year, you're teaching, whether it's year one, 10 or 20, if you can get the classroom management part, nailed down, I think it was Alex was saying that, if you can get the classroom management part, get the kids interested in you, no matter how old you are, that first year, that fifth year, it's going to be good. And if they're not interested in you, it doesn't matter what year you are either. They're not going to be interested in what you have to say. And you're going to struggle with the teaching. And I think that's where the burnout happens. The ones that at the end of every day, they're just exhausted because they've been putting out fires all day. If you can get them into you as a person, you don't have to put out those fires, and teaching is a lot easier and a lot more fun.
Absolutely. And Anthony.
Yeah. So like I told you, I accidentally became a teacher. Like I said, I was a hoop star in the college world and had dreams of going overseas and playing in the leagues, tried out for some teams. And like I said, I just kind of got offered the opportunity after all of that didn't work to teach. And I kind of told him, I said, this is not probably where I want to be at. So I kind of probably went in with the wrong mindset. I was really kind of young, 21, trying to, you know, make some money. And then if I had to leave 2 weeks later, I was like, let me just get a check and kind of just go at the time. And like you said, you young, you didn't know what you was getting into. But the principal there was like, I think you'll be great. They'll love you. And I was just like, So that first year, I kind of went into it like, okay, well, I never did this before. What should I do? And I kind of just thought from my perspective as a student, what would I want kind of to see from the teacher? And I really didn't have really much support. The advice that I got was from a veteran teacher who was in his fifth year to say, hey, if you got to slam doors, you know, throw desks, you know, yell at them, you do it, you know, let them know you boss. And in my mind, I was like, that don't seem like what I would want as a student. So I my first year, I kind of went in there. They didn't know I was a first year teacher. I kind of walk as if I've been doing this for a while. I kind of set my rules pretty, standard and kind of set that classroom management. Just kind of winging it, and it worked out, actually. I didn't really know the content as well, but I made it through to the point where I didn't have much support, so I was just kind of winging everything and trying everything. And, that time management that first year was probably the biggest thing until I just kind of had to just in the middle of the year just know you couldn't manage every single assignment. I just knew there was bigger issues going on in the classroom as far as families and stuff like that. So I kind of just really that first year just seemed to see put it in the perspective of if I was a student, how would I want to be treated? So I kind of built great relationships that first year for me. I didn't have the support from teacher-wise, which was surprising to me because I had veteran teachers, but I kind of just winged it. And by the second year, I pretty much felt like I knew exactly what to do, how to do it, how I wanted to change. I was big on music, so me and the kids have a great understanding, if they wanted to hear music, how to move in my classroom. So second year was a lot easier for me. So most of the challenges I kind of had was just not the support from the actual teacher. Really, it wasn't the kids. Kids are going to be kids, but that was probably the biggest thing. And then by the second year, I had a bigger support team, a guy who used to share all his information. So it worked out for me a little differently, but it was actually a blessing.
Your answers were fantastic for that, because I think, like Mike alluded to, the question is really related to retention. Like, how do you stay in the classroom? What's the desire to even be in the classroom? What's the motivation to do it? And everyone had a different story, which I think is really, really cool. Because I know my story is different than everyone else's as well. But a big thing, Alex, you touched on it a little bit, respect in the classroom. I remember when I worked in different schools and I worked with women, one of the things that I remember women having an issue or at least worries about was respect in the classroom. Classroom management is one of the most significant issues in schools, period. So what is your take on classroom management, how it's evolved and where it's going, and how do men have it easier than women? So we'll go Nixon, Matt, Anthony, and Alex. So again, the question is, what's your take on classroom management? How has it changed? And do you think men have it easier than women?
You said it's one of the most important. I think, especially when it involves retention or even the learning process, I think it's the most important. The teachers that I see, on social media, complaining about how stressful and how hard it is, and they're thinking about not coming back, or the conversations you hear in the lounge. It's always from the teachers that seem to have a difficult time getting the kids to do anything that they want them to do. And I've been into some of those classrooms, and I couldn't be, if the kids aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, if there's not a level of discipline in there, you're not going to like it. They're not going to like it. I mean, everybody craves, whether we admit it or not, everybody craves a little bit of discipline. And some people really need it, especially little kids. I think that's a huge thing. As far as whether men have it easier, I don't know. It depends. I know a couple of male teachers that have, wild and crazy classrooms. And then I know plenty of female teachers that don't put up with anything. And those kids know that if they step out of line, they're going to suffer for it. And they don't. So it depends on, kind of like Alex said a few minutes ago, if you can get those kids kind of into you as a person and they kind of enjoy a little bit of a rapport and they can talk to you, it's not necessarily you're the big bad teacher and they're the lowly student. But if they buy into you as a person, to what you're doing, then that becomes a lot easier for you. And that, to me, that's the thing with teacher retention. If you can get to the end of the day and it doesn't feel like you've been in a war, then teaching's a great profession. You're going to love it. You got your cliched summers off and 2 weeks at Christmas and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that classroom discipline, man, once you get that and get the hang of that, teaching is very fun.
All right, Matt?
I'll kind of do it backwards. I think men have it easier to start with, and then it's kind of yours to do with it, you know, whether you have effective classroom management or not. Because just like Mike said, I've seen men that don't have classroom management, and I've seen women that have exceptional classroom management. So there's, you know, it's not a cut and dry, like easy for men, tough for women. But I think, in general, you know, whether it's correct or not, like sometimes like people, you know, view the man as like in a little more authoritarian. And therefore that I think we have an easier place to start from. And yeah, if your classroom management's not good, then it doesn't matter how good your lessons are, because kids really aren't going to have a whole lot of buy-in. That's one of the things, I guess it's just my personality. I've never really had trouble with classroom management. My kids kind of know, I'm a no bullshit kind of guy, that when it's time to get stuff done, it's time to get stuff done. And they know that, you know, we can have fun with it as long as we're working. I'm definitely not the, you know, you're all going to face the front and you're not going to speak for 90 minutes kind of guy. Like, we try to have fun in there, but they know that, like, we're also not going to waste time. I think that's one of the worst things you can do for your classroom management is to have just downtime where you go, I don't know, do whatever. That's for sure a problem. But yeah, if you get classroom management down, man, you can get kids eating out of the palm of your hand. You can teach whatever you need to teach.
All right, Anthony.
I do agree with Matt. Like you said, I think that's just me, probably like a discipline thing. You know, hard work first and then everything else pays off. So I think, like you said, the hard work is actually the classroom management and putting things in place. Cause I even know, like you said, as a first year teacher, I didn't know anything, but I knew I didn't want certain things like food or the way you get up in my classroom. It's certain little tedious things that if you have those things down to a science, it does make everything else fun. You know, it makes everything, the way they move, the way they interact, the way you do groups, the way you do everything pretty much in the classroom. If you get that whole concept of, you know, how you want to manage everything and to where they can have some feedback into it. Also, it's the respect between you and the kids. You want to make sure they have some say so what works for them, because everything that you may be thinking, they need to know that you are willing to listen also. So once you kind of establish that, it makes everything so much easier. And like you said, you can teach whatever you want to, whether it's something complicated or something very easy. It just goes smooth either way. Far as women, I've seen a lot of male teachers, like I said, the one that gave me the advice about throwing chairs and you know, slamming doors and stuff like that. That was his suggestion of management, but his room was actually one of the worst in the schools. And he ended up getting, you know, fired, you know, the same year. So, and I've seen a lot of women, like you said, that know how to, you know, manage their classrooms. I feel like they actually manage it a lot better. In certain occasions, just for me teaching over the years, they have more of that stern motherhood kind of thing. But I've seen a lot of male teachers who are able to hold their own as well. So I don't think it's easier, but I do think it's kind of one of those things. They just kind of got to respect you, and you just need to set your rules from day one.
All right. Thank you, sir. And Alex.
Yeah, classroom management is very important. So it also depends on what you teach, because classroom management is different for different subjects. For example, math, gym, or English, for example. But one of my mentors was actually a female teacher. I've learned so much from her, and I've observed her classes on classroom management. So I don't think there's a big difference between male and female roles. It all depends on the person and how they manage a class. But once you have classroom management down, and like Nixon said, it's definitely, classes are going to be fun. So some of the plans that I use for classroom management is, of course, to make your class always be honest with the students and to make your classes fun and enjoyable in a way, especially when you're teaching English as a second language and literature on top of that. So it could be a challenge. But try and always find something that will catch their attention and how kids can relate to the subject that you're teaching, to the area that you're teaching.
I love those answers. While I haven't chimed in a ton on those, one of the things is, and I know Mike Nixon knows specifically, like I worked with a lady who I have a great deal of respect for, Lori Collins, and she was an excellent disciplinarian. Now, I didn't agree with how she always did it, not because it was bad, it just didn't match my personality. But I loved going to her to just kind of look at how she did things. One of the things that I recognize, and this is just kind of a follow-up if you want to follow up on this one. Two things I learned about discipline that I didn't know until I went to another country. The first thing I learned is that culture means so much, because if you don't understand the culture of the community where the school is, then it's almost impossible to discipline or have a discipline in the class. Because discipline is not punishment. Discipline is to have control where you are the ship's captain. And if you don't know the culture of the community and the school, it's a very, very difficult thing to manage. Second thing is that I took part in a program that they actually had a training where they said discipline came first and content came second. And I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I think content married with discipline goes well together. Matt kind of alluded to it. And I think if you master your content, you understand how you want to deliver it. And you take Anthony's method of how do you want to be taught, or what did you want a class to look like? I think you then use your content to discipline your classroom, because then they're interested in what you're teaching them. And then similar to what Alex and Mike said, then they're invested in you because they see you as an authority on the thing, and then they think that thing matters more. So I'll give you an opportunity to if you want to respond to that, you can respond to that, and then we'll move to the next question.
I'll jump in there on that. And I'll respectfully disagree with you there. There's no way that you can, it doesn't matter whether you are, you know, an accomplished poet, author, or anything with a language arts class, if they're bouncing off the walls, they're not going to do anything. You got to get control of them first. You had control of yours. One thing I noticed in this group, I think we're all coaches or coached things in the past. And I think that probably has a lot to do with our classroom management too. I've often said, I don't know whether I teach like a coach or coach like a teach, but I think there's probably one came first and then it affected the other one. But I think I do it the same way. And I think parenting, I also do it the same way. And I don't know whether it was the parenting style that bled over to the teaching or the teaching style that bled over into the parenting. But if you don't have the control of them first and the discipline and the management of them first, then it doesn't matter what your capability is as a teacher. You're not going to be able to get that across to them. And there's different ways, maybe that's what you were saying too. There's different ways of getting that across. If they like you and you they see you as an expert in that field, there's some give and take and you can get it to them. But I'm just thinking about those crazy classes, those wild dudes that you step into from time to time. And those classes aren't going to learn anything no matter what. And you referenced Lori Collins. She was pretty low key, very stern. She would dry sense of humor. She would cut up a little bit, but it was, those kids knew when they got in there, it was time for math. But they knew that when they walked in, they knew that they weren't going to get away with anything. And I think she kind of embodies what I'm saying, as far as you got to have control of them first and then get in there. And I also agree with you about the culture as well. I'm fortunate in that I'm teaching at the school that I went to school with. So on that first day of school, I can whip out an old yearbook and show them my picture. And I can, for two or three or four of them in every class, I can say, hey, this is your dad, or this is your mom, and I went to school with them. And right off the bat, they establish a little sense of familiarity with you. And that helps my management too. But yeah, I guess there's more than one way to look at that issue. And you got to find that fine balance between having the control and getting your education across.
Cool. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would, like I said, I would have to agree. Like you said, we probably are all athletes or former athletes, coaches. And I think, like you said, the important thing is you want to make sure that you build that relationship and making sure that everything, you know, we get everything in order first is kind of the key. And then from there, we can kind of do whatever. Like I said, me being a former athlete, I was able to share my stories. Me being a student athlete who got a scholarship, you know, kids that was in my class, because I went to Malik Creek, so a lot of the kids were going on football scholarships, and being able to share that experience kind of with them, they knew I was vulnerable, but then at the same time, they knew that, you know, I meant business, because I believe in, like you said, hard work. And me teaching math, you know, most kids hate that subject and they come in with the negative attitude. So I would try to, like you said, hear their opinions, get their intake on what they think that'll help them, you know, succeed in the classroom. And once they kind of put those things in place and see that we're sticking to them, and this is what you said, is kind of it, everything just worked itself out. So the respect factor, the classroom manager, all of that kind of ties in to, and a relationship kind of ties in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like Lou, what you said, the content thing is important. I think you have to have classroom management to start, but even with good classroom management, if they realize you don't know what you're talking about, you lose them. And so one hand kind of washes the other for at least 20 seconds. Stay safe from coronavirus.
What about support from the school? Because I know some schools, you don't get much support or on how you manage a class, and some schools are very strict. They have that strict culture. I've noticed that as well. So it depends.
Yeah, I think administrative support is important, because if you run kind of a no-nonsense classroom and a kid's really kind of being a knucklehead, and you do have to write them up or bounce them out or something, and you don't get support on the next level, then really it's kind of tough to have good classroom management, because even if you do, if they know that there's not going to be consequences, then, you know, they don't care.
I'll actually chime in on that. The support system is super huge, especially if you're new to the school or the culture, because your word can only go as far as the support level. So if you discipline a student and then you're new and the administrative level doesn't have a relationship to sort of back up what you're saying, then you lose it. But on the other hand, I think, for instance, like Mike and I know, because we worked together for a while, if you're known in the school, then you and you are a disciplinarian, or you're at least seen as fair, I think then you can take that to the next level where you don't necessarily need that administrative support, because you as a sort of icon in the community, in the culture, they take you for what you are and they trust that you have influence past the administration. So I agree with that for sure, but I know that the administrative support is really important. Anybody else want to chime in on that? All right, so for the next part, right? So the next part is definitely a really, really important question that deals with respect, right? And it's about the pay. I know specifically in the United States and in other countries, it's kind of different. So the pay, in my opinion, the pay for teachers normally in the United States is kind of low. And it's because, and this is my opinion, but it also, I have looked at statistics, it's because it most of the practitioners are women. And it kind of goes to the phraseology that's new to me, the pink collar job thing, is that this is seen, education is seen as a secondary wage earner. And so I think then they feel it's okay to pay those people less. So do you think pay is a really big issue for teachers? And do you think they're compensated for the professional level that they hold? And so I will have Matt, Alex, Mike, and then Anthony answer the question.
I know we've actually discussed this at length, whether, you know, teachers are viewed as professionals. I think that's the other thing too that kind of ties back into a previous question, is why you see a lot of men go into administration is for a pay raise. That'd be the only reason that would kind of want to do it, because I wouldn't want to leave the classroom, but I can't pay my bills in enjoyment. You know, I got to use dollars. And so I feel like to a point we're somewhat fairly compensated, because the pay structure is so incredibly strange, because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter for my paycheck whether I'm good at my job or not. I can just show up, and because I've been there a year longer, I get more money. Or because I get a master's degree or my national board certification, they give me more money. Even if my lesson plans never change, whether they're effective or not. Whereas other jobs, you know, you kind of have to, you know, you're evaluated by your superiors or by, you know, whatever metrics they use to be able to decide if you are worthy of a raise, or if you get, you know, X% per year or whatever. And so I think, you know, it's kind of a hard question to say, are teachers adequate or, you know, adequately compensated? Some are undercompensated, and some are, in my opinion, dramatically overcompensated.
All right. And Alex?
Well, I think that in most fields, people would complain about their pay. I don't know how it is. Actually, all teachers make different states, I guess, different areas, different countries. Teachers are compensated in different ways. Well, from something that you've mentioned, that is it due to more females being, due to more women teaching than male roles? Is it one of the reasons? It could be, because that way it would show that, especially back in the day, as all male roles would work and females would be stay home, and once they went out to work, wives, so that would be like a secondary income. So that could be another reason why a pay could be lower for teachers. But yeah, I think another issue is supply and demand. If there are a lot of teachers and not enough jobs, then the salaries can easily go down. But I feel like teaching is a very important role, because that really sets teens and kids for their future and what they want to study from. So it's definitely an important role. Of course, we all want to get paid well.
All right, thank you, sir. And Mike?
I just want to point out that we just had Alex, and now you've got Michael and Anthony after me. If we could just get Eddie and Alex, the Van Halen brothers, we'd have the whole band. For an 80-year-old guy like that, that would be a pretty good start. I think the previous guys hit it right on the head. Salaries are low because they started low, because it was mostly women in the profession. It was seen as a pink-collar job, and there were lots of women out there that were willing to teach, which goes back to the respect level, too. It's a gender stereotype of a bygone era. We're trying to get rid of that. Would be good. Is the pay fair? Yeah, like Matt said, for some people it is, for some people it's not, on the top and the bottom end of that scale. I know a lot of people that basically teach to their salary, and you know, they're not going to go way overboard, and they just don't, you know, they don't do the bare minimum either. They're like, this is what I think I'm getting paid to do. We get 2 months off in the summer. If you equate that out, once you max out to the pay scale in North Carolina, at least, that's 60 grand a year. That's not horrible. It's not super great necessarily. But a lot of people forget about the pension that you get. And I started right out of college. I'd be retired. This would be my retirement year. And if I lived another 20 or 30 years, I'd be getting a check from the state every month just for being alive, as a thanks for my 30 year service. And you never hear anybody talk about that when they're talking about teacher salaries. So would I take a higher salary? Yes, that'd be great. Should I get one? Maybe. But when I retire, am I going to get money out of that? Yeah, I'm going to be making a pension, hopefully for decades to come. And that needs to be added into the thought process too. A lot of people are going to retire based on their savings, and I'm going to get to retire based on savings and a pension. So I'm pretty happy with that. I'm happy with that decision.
All right, and Anthony?
So I do think I'm not sure exactly. I never understood the pay scale. It's kind of hard to explain, because I just feel like the education system, from my thoughts, I just feel like it's not like an entertainment, how we watch basketball and it brings in all of this money. I don't know if they value what we do on a day-to-day basis is, you know, something. I know it's kind of hard to put in words, because I just feel like it's a priority that needs to be done, us teaching, and we are getting paid, yes, but I don't, you know, and I see a lot of people say, I feel like you should make, you know, $80,000 to $100,000 for the type of work that you do, but we're not getting that. And since I've been in the system, since I started, it's only been going up little by little. And like you said, now that I've been entered into the educational world and kind of understanding the background of what really transpires and the time that you have to put in and the efforts that you have to actually put in. I feel like everybody does deserve that increase and a major increase, but I just don't know if the other side, the people who are making these decisions, is really valuing that. Like you said, I know in the entertainment world, they bring in millions and billions of dollars, you know, just to watch a game and everything, but not understanding from our perspective that we're putting in 80 hours a week, sometimes maybe more, and we're kind of not really getting, you know, the equal pay for it. So I really don't know how to really answer it too much, but I don't know.
That's a good answer. No, I get it, because yeah. You value your time, and you feel like, okay, this effort that I'm putting in to produce this thing should be compensated based on the market that you see. But it's interesting because Matt and I actually had a conversation at length about this, about, well, what do teachers produce, right? And that's how you produce the market value of it. And I think Mike adds a very valuable point about the pension and compensation. But I think that the issue with the pension and compensation is that's on a state-by-state basis. And I remember the time when North Carolina was going, or the country was going through its recession, and some states didn't manage their pension funds very well, and it wiped people out. So then you have to kind of look at that in sort of that way. So if anybody else has any follow-up up on that, I'll let you follow up, because I have a couple more questions left, and then we'll continue. So any follow-ups there or no? Cool. All right, so yeah, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, one more thing, actually. I think a lot of people that go into education, it's because they love to teach or they want to be teachers. It's not always about the money. That's the way. It's one of those professions, I think, Mike. So that's just another view.
No, I agree. And I just think that one of the issues they have is that they want to have a living wage, so to speak. Like, for instance, when my sister was a teacher in New York, she got pretty well compensated. But then I don't know if you all personally know New York City, but New York City has some interesting children in their public school system. So and the cost of living there is quite significant. So I get it to a degree, but that's why I asked the question. So as far as advancement goes, advancement is a huge, huge thing that I think people care about, because even if you love teaching, I think you still want to feel you have the opportunity, whatever your profession is, that you can advance. And so my question is, is teaching a terminal career, which the end is to be a teacher? And if that is the case, I mean, what are some of the advancement opportunities that teachers can take advantage of to continue to develop themselves so they can feel like they're progressing? Because education is a very different field than other professions. So the order I'll have you go in is I'll have Anthony, Mike, Alex, and then Matt.
I would say I feel like at this point in stage, I think the opportunities for women, like I said, we from history and kind of up until this point, I think a lot of women are being able to get those same opportunities as males, like you said, moving up far from a teacher to a dean to like I said, I have a female principal, and I had pretty much all female principals and one male through the time frame. So I feel like, and even to the district level, I see a lot of women being afforded these opportunities. So I do think it's becoming more noticeable at this point. As far as a terminal career, not necessarily. I think it's really, and I think with teaching period, I think you kind of just know where you want to be as a person. You know, some people, like me personally, I never would want to probably be in an administrative role, even though I've heard I would probably be good in that role. But I know some people feel like the end is, like you said, the classroom in a sense. So, I mean, it just depends on as a person, your family, kind of where you're at in life, and where you need to go and what you want to actually achieve. I think that's kind of up to them. And disconnecting from the student body, not too sure how to really answer that, so I'm gonna just pass on that one.
Oh, that's fine, man. That's fine. All right. Mike.
Criminal career has kind of a negative connotation, I think. Like Alex said a few minutes ago, teaching is one of those kind of, this is what I want to do. This is my passion. This is my, you know, you hear about little kids. Oh, I want to be a teacher. Nursing is the same way. And he also referenced the supply and demand part of it. For a long time, there were plenty of people, mostly girls, mostly women that wanted to be a nurse. You know, they were a little kid. So I want to be a nurse when I grew up. And, there were too many of them and the nurses weren't paid that well. And now there's not as many of them. And now nursing is a great career choice to get into if you want to make a lot of money. Teaching still has plenty of people. There's still plenty of people, men and women, that want to get into teaching for whatever reasons they have. And until that supply and demand balances out, you're not going to see a bunch of tax dollar increases to get salaries to go up. That's just a basic market, you know, supply and demand kind of deal. But as far as advancement goes, yeah, I guess terminal career, you could look at it that way. If you want to be a teacher, though, you're getting to do what you want to do every day for as long as you want to do it. I think the older principals I've seen, I don't know why they got into it. Maybe it was for advancement. Maybe it was for more money. The younger ones that I've seen, it was, I think, 100% extra money. They wanted their salary to be as much as possible. And if you're not a teacher, that's pretty much what you can do. Like Matt said, you can kind of max out your salary with getting your board certification and having a master's degree and the pay bumps that used to go in North Carolina with that. But if you wanted to make more money, you had to get a bigger administration job. And that's the environment that we're in. And if you want to have a bunch of advancement and that kind of thing, then you'll have to be an administrator. I think that most of us, like we've said on here countless times, most of us like being in the classroom, like being around the kids. The administrators don't seem to have the chance during the daily basis to have those enjoyable reactions with the kids like we do. So I wouldn't trade that for anything. I'll be happy with the smaller amount of money, I guess, and the higher satisfaction in my job.
Great answer. Alex?
Yeah, those are some great points. That's a tough question, advancement. So in my professional teaching career, I don't know. I'm pretty much, I feel like I've hit the ceiling because I don't want any position higher than that. I like being in the classroom. I want to teach. Of course, hopefully I can make more money and I can concentrate on my own projects outside of teaching. But as far as teaching goes, I can see myself, especially teaching literature, gives me an opportunity. I can move things around so that I don't get bored teaching exactly the same thing every time. I can be more creative. I can bring out creativity from me and from the students using literature and English. But yeah, teaching is something that we're passionate about, and I feel like for most of us it is a terminal career, and this is as far as it goes, teaching and retiring as teachers.
All right, and Matt?
I think it's economically terminal. Yeah. You can look and kind of know what you're going to be making pretty much at any point in your career. You know, I mean, it's going to adjust for inflation, and there'll be, you know, occasional, they say raises, but you know, if they don't also adjust for inflation, then a lot of times it's just inflation. So your purchasing power doesn't really change. But I think it comes down to, you kind of have to be, if you want to be good at it, you have to understand that sometimes the rewards will not be financial. And you have to have some of that intrinsic motivation to just want to be better at whatever it is that you do. And understand that it may not grow your check. For me, I guess maybe there's some ego in there, of knowing that like I've gotten better at something or something I did, I know was effective. And just kind of, you know, knowing like, yeah, hey, I did that well. And like, sometimes that kind of has to be enough. I've considered, you know, going into administration. I haven't done it yet. I'm in the process of doing my national boards, and it's 100%, because I want a bigger pay, every bit of it. I've definitely learned from it. But if they said, hey, you can go through this process just for the sake of learning, with the amount of work that it took, I think that's kind of a hard sell, because, you know, people are motivated by different things. And bills don't pay themselves.
All right. So, as we wrap up, I want to thank you gentlemen for your input. And so the podcast is called Voices because I care about the contributing voices of the people that I've become in contact with in my life. I think you have valuable opinions, and when people listen to this, they'll totally understand why I think that. So you have about 30 to 45 seconds, and I want you to be the final voice. So the last voice is obviously you talk about anything you want to, but I just want to say thank you to you, and I will have you go in the order we started. So Alex, Anthony, Matt, and Mike, you have about 30 to 45 seconds for the final word.
I've learned some. There are some great points. When you get a bunch of teachers talking about different points, you get a lot of various opinions, and you can learn. One thing about being a teacher is you learn from other teachers, and I feel like in discussions like this, you can learn a lot. Take care, guys.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Like you're saying, just seeing a common ground across the board that is happening, like you said, in all types of schools, atmospheres, environments. It's just cool to see and being able to agree on certain things and disagree and just seeing different perspectives from that aspect, especially from the male's perspective. It's pretty cool. So I appreciate the opportunity. Hope to do it again in the future.
Yeah, gentlemen, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you guys. Definitely love hearing different perspectives from other professionals who do the same or similar things that I do. I would say that we're starting to see a shift with the whole like coronavirus thing, right? A lot of us are starting to shift from being, you know, face-to-face to going online. You know, collaborate with your colleagues, find best practices, and hopefully, you know, I think this might be kind of an interesting time for parents to kind of see what it is we do on a day-to-day basis, and hopefully we can continue to work with them, because sometimes I understand our relationship with parents can sometimes be adversarial, so hopefully it can be a little more collaborative, because whatever's best for the kids is the best thing to do. So again, thank you guys. I've enjoyed it.
Matt, you're right. The parent relationship can be adversarial at times, but I've also here in the last couple of weeks gotten multiple emails from parents, you know, all capital letters. I will never take you for granted again. I can't believe, you know, you have to put up with this kid all the time. LOL. It's nice to be in a profession where you can look at somebody when they were 10, 11, 12 years old and see them at 21, 22, 23. And they tell you, hey, you did this, or I remember you said this one day and made a difference, or I'm glad you mean to doing this because now I'm going to do this for my career, or this is, you know, college because of this. Not many jobs you can do that in. So I guess you can choose money, or you can choose making a difference. And you know, if you do it right, you can have a little bit of both.